This is a conspiracy. That's what this is.
One big damn conspiracy! And everyone's in on it!
I know what's going on.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
The person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
Did you see the memo about this?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
Don't you see what this means? This is it! This is the beginning of everything! I've been waiting for this all my life!
Welcome to episode 60 of your Missing the Point podcast, where we discuss the weird, the wonderful, and the downright bizarre aspects of life as we have conversations with people from all over the world. Today I'm joined by a great bloke, one of the first guests to ever appear on this show. He's a produce-growing, chicken-raising, turkey-wrangling, homesteading hero, host of the Are We Content podcast. Let us welcome the one and only Chud X. Welcome, Chud.
Hey, thanks for having me, Drew. I don't know if I can say anything about turkeys too much yet. I've got four of them, and they're only a couple inches tall. So we'll see how that goes.
Baby steps. You got to start somewhere, brother. But I was actually really excited to hear about that side of things, how you're branching out into to other forms of birds on the farm, because naturally thinking that turkeys would be something a lot of Americans would go to. You've got the North American turkey. It's a native bird, and your plans for those sound amazing that we were talking about off the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be awesome to get them to just start breeding out in the woods and have a flock of wild turkeys out there. Make Thanksgiving easy.
Yeah, man. Anything, any kind of game you can trap on your own property, perfect.
Yes, exactly.
End up being like a land baron of the Dark Ages, where you've got your own little hunting areas. That'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. That would be amazing.
So I wanted to get you on here today because I've been listening to you for quite a few years now. Initially, it started off hearing you on Deborah Gets Red Peeled, and then I heard you on Buffalo and Legs Show, and then it was with you and your wife, Lani, listening to you on those. There's been one constant that I hear from you that I think is quite admirable and refreshing, is that you admit to not knowing anything 100%. And I think that's a rarity in the field of the truth to community, because people tend to get in their echo chambers, or they put themselves in a little box of they know for sure. Their thing is the thing. And what I hear from you is that you're willing to admit that this is what I've researched, this is what I've found out, but do I know for sure? No. This is what I currently think or what I believe at the moment, but you're never dogmatic or really tied down to any one specific thing in the truth of community, which I think has been great. And that your views have changed over time, and you talk about that, and you're not ashamed to admit that, hey, you know what, geez, I was wrong back in the 90s. Boy, was I wrong. And you can reflect on it, which I think is fantastic. Your views change, your beliefs change, and you're able to express that in a way that I think is something this community needs, because people tend to sit in a realm of, I don't know, the UFO community, and you can tell when these people, the penny drops and there's aspects of their own belief systems you can tell they don't quite believe in anymore, but they still grip onto it. It's like they can't escape it. And you seem to be the person that can change your thinking and your approach quite easily. So I thought, yeah, we need to talk about this paradigm shift and what that means for a truther, because I think inevitably we all come across that. Our paradigm shifts with the new information and the new research we do. So I thought we could start off with, now, where did you start off on the whole idea of conspiracy or truth of community? And we can just move forward from there.
Yeah, well, I think first, you know, thank you very much. That was very, very kind words. You know, you point out that not knowing things 100%, we need more of that in the truther community. But what gets us here is that exact thing, is that we grow up thinking one thing and then we learn that we were wrong. And that shatters a paradigm that used to exist for us. And it takes that to get us into conspiracy and truth and things like that in the first place. So really, it's bizarre to me that anyone in the truther community doesn't get this simple concept that I've had for a very long time, which is the more you know, the less you know. Or the more you know, the less you understand what you know. And, you know, it all these rabbit holes just kind of keep leading to new things. You know, if you take like a big one, we all loved space. Or we could even, you know, look, even take it a step further back. We all loved Santa Claus, right? We believed in Santa Claus, and we had to come to terms with that our friends and family were lying to us for the first few years of our lives. And it's, you know, like, it never happened with me per se, but I've heard many stories of children who are devastated when they find out that Santa Claus isn't real. And it's the same thing I was going to say, space. You know, I was obsessed with space when I was a kid. I was even obsessed with space as an adult. I got into it on a different level when I started smoking marijuana and, you know, getting high and just thinking about the infinite, how space is just infinite. Oh, it's so cool, man. Nobody can wrap their head around this. It's so wild. And then when things started to unravel for me, you know, I had to basically swallow my pride. And as it is now, I basically think that space is fake, right? But I'm open-minded to that it's real, because if it was real at one point in my mind and it became fake, I have to be able to continue to expand that. I've talked a lot about Earth shape in these years that I've been podcasting, and it might surprise some people because I don't outright say it very often, but I am not a flat earther. I don't believe in flat earth. I side with the flat earth community quite often. I feel like I'm closer to those people than I am the people who believe in the globe still. But I've never seen that it's flat, which is my main argument for why it's not a globe. I've never seen that it's a globe. I've also never seen that it's flat. I can see clues. I can see things that just don't add up. But there are things within the globe model that add up very nicely. And I don't just discredit those. I don't just throw all of that away because I want to believe something else. And, you know, this same type of scenario repeats itself for anything that's within the concept of truth and conspiracy. On 9/11, when I was the only person in my house of seven people with a television set, and everyone came into my bedroom to watch the news glued to the screen, you know, I was sitting there saying, well, duh, of course this happened. You know, I was basically making a blowback argument. I was just saying, well, you know, we bomb the shit out of them all the time. Like, why wouldn't they come hit us? But no part of me thought this is fake. There was no part of me that thought this was an inside job. Certainly not fake. Maybe an inside job I could have been persuaded to at that time, but no one was presenting that. I was just taking in new information, and I took it the way I did, and I felt the way I did, and I still basically feel the way I did to a degree, if the narrative I was hearing that day was still what I believe today, it would still apply the same, that we were the bad guys for a long time, so we're going to get hit too. But over time, of course, my opinion has changed on what was going on that day. I wish I could have a little time machine, rewind and watch all that footage as it was coming in and look at it with the critical eye that we all wish that we could have. But I think, you can't do that.
No, you raised a great question at the end of yesterday's episode on Are We Content about what is the reality? What is reality to you? And I think that's in a lot of ways the same question for what is truth, because truth to us is dependent on what we perceive our reality to be, what our experiences are, what our understanding is at that time. Your understanding of a child is the truth is Santa is real. He comes every year. He puts presents under the tree. I write him a letter. I see him at the mall or the shopping center. I tell him what I'd like. Santa's real. That is the truth for people at that time. But like you said, the more you learn, the less you know over time. And we see that definitely within our community and just life in general. The more you learn, you realize things about what your misconceptions of the past or maybe mistruths, things that you thought you knew were true or that you knew were right, could have been misconstrued along the way. And you seem to find this more and more, I think more particularly within this community, because we do so many deep dives on things and we grab onto things and just adamantly research them. And it kind of becomes a part of what it means to be human. We have this intrinsic need to understand things and this curiosity that really, for people like us, it can't be quenched. That's why we go down a rabbit hole for 5 hours on YouTube videos back in the heyday, or we read books at end for 2 weeks straight. It's the need to know, but at the same time, the need to know can break paradigms.
Mm-hmm. Right. As you learn that what you had learned before was wrong. You know, that's even the premise of science as a whole, is there's one thing that seems to be true. So we test it and test it until it's not true. And if we keep testing it and it is true, then we continue on that direction. You know, if science is actually being done when people are using that word, but that word gets thrown around a lot in ways that I believe is deceptive. But that on its own, to see that the word science can be deceptive, is one of those things that we have to be able to, at one point in time, all of us heard something on, maybe even on the news, that had to do with science that we believed, and we repeated because we repeated the words. We told people, hey, did you know X, Y, and Z? Scientifically proven. I know those words have come out of my mouth quite a few times. Oh, no, it's scientifically proven. But to really understand that, you know, science is never settled. Science is always moving forward. Science needs to always be changing. And that's why, you know, during 2020, it was real difficult hearing so many people say hard line facts. And that is what really got to me, and I would hope got to a lot of other people, was, you know, people were saying things as absolute fact. And if you were on the outside of that, you were absolutely wrong in their opinion. And even if you were proven to be right later, it didn't matter to them. It just didn't matter. And it kind of needs to be the opposite of that within the truth community, of that we need to be able to take something in. I need to be able to believe at any point in time that we did go to the moon. That is one of the few conspiracies that the moon landing conspiracy is one of the few that I really stand on, that I really don't think we went to the moon. And it's simply because I just keep trying over and over again. And it always just comes up. It comes up worse every time I start looking at it. And, but if things changed, if suddenly we started going to the moon again, which we haven't for over 50 years, if people started going again and it became a common thing, it became something so common that someone within six relations to you has been to the moon, and you can talk to people and lots of people are telling you, no, I've been there and I've been back, and, you know, I've taken the trip 3 times, you know, things like that. I would have to start changing where I'm at. I would have to start questioning, how did I get so many things so wrong? And in this case of the moon, it would be, why did they present the information so poorly for so long? but I need to be open to that. I have to, because if I'm not, then I'm no better than the person who won't engage in a conversation with a flat earther, because they know with absolute certainty that we'd live on a globe. And I just can't let myself go there. I've always, since I was young, I've taken contrarian points of view. And a lot of the time that was in vain. I would just take the contrarian point of view and I would argue with my friends, and then I would just be proven wrong and I'd have to move on. But I was just kind of being an asshole, you know, essentially. But I think I learned from that as I grew up. And I learned to, even though I state contrarian things all the time, I truly work hard to never state things in such a way that I can't go back on it. In fact, I'll even say, even if I state it wrong in such a way that it seems like I can't go back on it, I am willing to go back on my word in order to continue learning and to continue growing.
It's that absolute certainty that you mentioned before, that almost absolute truth. I know because I've done the work. It reflects academia and mainstream science in complete absolute mirroring as far as I'm concerned, which is I was quite taken back by. I'd always been a bit of a conspiracy theorist, someone who's always looked at the outside, not knowing that, and looked at the world as being different from what we've been presented. I went through academia, went through university, so I saw the mainstream establishment idea that ideas only change one death at a time in academia because they're so dogmatic in their views. And until someone kind of passes away and the new generation comes through with a torch, that's when things tend to change. I didn't expect to see that in the truth community when I first stepped into it. I listened to podcasts and then you interact with people and some people still have that kind of a dogmatic view that their truth is the truth because I've done the research. And the idea of having absolutes when you've come from a place of absolutes is quite strange. Like you said, the moon landing is an example. Everyone grows up with the idea that we absolutely landed on the moon. It's history lessons. There's video of it. There's anniversaries, things that we constantly get given. It's an absolute. It happened. And then you do some research and go, hang on, some of these things don't add up. How did we get to the moon with technology that was equivalent to a modern day calculator or less than? Well, how did they get through the Van Allen radiation belts without protective shielding? And all those questions kind of add up. But at the same time, once you come to this new knowledge, sometimes people, not everyone, puts themselves into a box that's the new truth without giving it that air of skepticism or ability to change your view over time that it may not be 100% factual.
Yeah, totally. It's like you get skeptical about something and then you use your skepticism to research and then you're no longer a skeptic. You have something new.
Yeah,
and you don't like any, and maybe you don't even like people being skeptical of your point of view now.
Yes.
And that's like a, you know, I want to say it's dangerous. I don't know. Maybe that's a strong word to be using, but I want to say it's a dangerous place to put ourselves in as humans, as growing people. We're all constantly learning and growing, and you're going to stunt your growth if you block out the skepticism of your own ideas. And something else to throw on top of that, as I'm saying it, a lot of people who find themselves in the truth or conspiracy world, don't really have their own opinions. Unfortunately, they get them from somewhere else and then they just repeat them. Forever, I've been skeptical of everything I'm told to the point where, you know, now I just don't believe anything. But as I got deeper into some of these big conspiracies, I would hear things. I'd listen to a podcast and it would blow my mind. It would blow my mind so much that I have to go and research this. I have to go and see if what they were just saying checks out at all. And most of the time it does. Most of the time it's not totally out there. And sometimes it'll appear as though it is totally out there. And then you have to keep peeling back the layers and then you start to see, oh, I now see where this person was coming from. And if people are in this world who came in, I think it happens a lot when people come in quick and they go deep fast and they go from a total normie, I'll say, just, you know, believing the conventional thought on things in general to, 9/11 was an inside job. CIA killed Kennedy. We got, you know, there's aliens, flat earth. I don't know, throw it in, you know, whatever it is, all the way up to, like, we saw a lot of people dive in headfirst in 2020, I think. People who hadn't really questioned things. And then something came along that was so big that they were one of the few, like us, who did question things. And they went, oh, shit. If they're lying about this in front of our faces, what else are they lying about? And then they go backwards and they go deep in these holes. And then January 6th happens and they're doing it in front of our eyes, people. You've got to see this. And they're so set that everything that they just learned is all 100% true that they're not even going that deep really on any of them.
They're
just almost hearing about it.
They almost go from, like you said, they're they're not doing anything, not really thinking for themselves. They're being presented with new information. And it almost becomes like a revelation of the method type of thing. This brand new information's being given to you. And naturally, a lot of people go, I've got to tell people. I've got to share this. This is groundbreaking. Everyone has to know. And it almost becomes an air of excitement around it because they've hidden this from us. And no one knows about it. I have this almost intrinsic need and duty to tell people because I was lied to.
Yeah.
It's a duty. I've got to tell those people too. I think that's what almost brings people into that dogmatic view of that's the right answer without giving it that air of skepticism, which we're talking about. Outside of that, you mentioned COVID was a big one. I think COVID was a good one for the people who were, and I hate to use this word because it's such a throwaway line, awake. People who were already skeptical of the mainstream establishment and things we're presented with, I think that changed the paradigm for them as well because they might have already had a preconceived notion or a theory or something that they really focused on. And because of that event, it changed things.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was aliens. I was the aliens guy, right? I grew up as a kid reading Bigfoot books, Loch Ness, Sasquatch, all that fun little cryptid stuff. And it ended up going into my mum gave me this book the day after Roswell when I was 12. This was like my Bible throughout my teenage years. I quickly became the alien guy. I was adamant. I knew during my teens and early 20s, into my late 20s rather, that aliens were real and that was the big deception governments were lying about. It made sense, you know, if they disclose
aliens. You were completely green-pilled.
I was. Or grey-pilled, whatever that skin
color. Grey-pilled, there we go, yeah.
I was adamant that that was the truth because all the information stacked up as to why they couldn't tell the public, yada, yada, yada. But then that changed. My paradigm shifted. The last little bit which kind of hooked me into it was I spoke to an Air Force intelligence avionics technician who I just openly asked, I said, so this alien stuff, is it real? And he looked at me and said, you know what? I can't confirm or deny it, but if you were to go out at night for a month straight looking at the night sky, you'd never want to go to sleep again. So that for me confirmed it. Then COVID happened. And as COVID happened, I went, hang on. The government lies to us about something such as big as this. Could that be gaslighting people with aliens? And then I came along to the podcast with you and Adam, and you're talking about aliens and space being fake and gay. And I went, I really need to challenge myself on this. I've been so dogmatic on it. I really need to do the due diligence and look at this. And now I'm of the mindset now that aliens are probably fake and gay. There could be something tangible behind it, whether it's government psyops, government technology, interdimensional things, what have you. I don't think the stereotypical aliens that we're presented with from like encounters of the third kind are necessarily real anymore. I'm not as dogmatically fixed on that.
Right. That makes total sense because, I mean, those are that type of alien, that aliens as they are described to us. I'll put it that way. That was programmed. You can see how that was programmed. Now, it could have been programmed off of truth. Could have been based off truth, and then they programmed us to know the truth. But as a lot of people in this community know, it doesn't have to be true to be programmed in. So, you know, I stay very open-minded about aliens. I'll say that as they're described, no, I don't buy it one bit right now, today. But, you know, if I had a flying saucer come down in my backyard and take me away or take my chickens or just come down and look at me for a minute and then take off, well, I'd be rethinking things real quick especially if it came down and went back up as described by alien people. Now, even all of that said, with not believing that, I believe most people who are saying that they've seen or encountered aliens. Now, some of them, of course, just like anything, and it has to be anything when you say it, there are scam artists out there. There are people who want attention, who are making stuff up. So it's not just believe whatever anybody says. But if I'm talking to someone in real life and they're making eye contact with me and they're telling me that they had an encounter with an alien and it changed their life, I believe them. They had an encounter with what they're calling an alien.
They had an encounter with something.
Life. And I believe that they encountered something. Now, I could, the level of open-mindedness, I'll keep as to what that is. They might have encountered something that existed only inside of their brain. But they may have encountered something that existed in a different realm. And they may have come, they may have gone through the realm, or the realm may have weakened and shown through, or the alien type being came through the realm to our realm. You know, I mean, just infinite possibilities like that. Maybe even, I'm even more open to the idea that the aliens are coming out of the water, mm-hmm. that there are maybe inner earth beings that are coming up and out of the water, or the mountains, or portals that we can't see.
The ultra terrestrial type of idea where they're actually from here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Sure. I'm completely into that. I'm completely into, you know, I entertain a lot of different ideas, and like, I don't know if you've heard of puddle theory, or as it's called by some people, puddle theory. The idea, it's basically flat earth, except that we are on a globe, but we're on a really, really, really big globe, and that it's largely ice, but we have puddles here and there, and earth is one of those puddles. And the extraterrestrial is coming from the extra terrain that is outside of this puddle that we're in. You know, people even have cool maps out there that are just totally bogus, I think, but it's fun nonetheless to think, you know, there's all these puddles, and these puddles are the planets of the solar system, and that they're reflected maybe through this, a mirror in the sky, you know, all these different possibilities, that those might even be real places that could be traveled to, but it sounds nothing like what NASA's talking about. It sounds nothing. It sounds anything that I say, if I say it to someone who believes the NASA story, that everything I'm saying is just crazy. And it is pretty crazy. That's why I like it. And that's why I entertain it. And there's nothing to me to say that any of that stuff that I just spewed out isn't true. Just as there isn't anything to tell me that being on a globe is true. Right. So like finding and walking these lines, I think it's ultimately important that people, the deeper down the rabbit holes you go, you just stay open to that. You always need to be able to be wrong. You need to keep a lifeline back to reality, we'll say. Reality just being the baseline, what everyone else believes. Because at the same time, too, with all of this, as I say that, sometimes I can get into collective consciousness ideas, and that we create reality by all of us believing the same thing at the same time. Thereby, the Earth is a globe because we believe it, because we've made it that, because we all believe it. And at a different time, maybe people believed something different. And it's just impossible to know.
Ironically, in education, we have a term that's called the learning pit. It's okay not to know things. It's okay to be wrong. You're at a point in your education where you think you know everything, and as soon as you learn some new things, you go down. And you're in a point where you don't know as much as you thought you did. It can be very frustrating, very confronting, but you have to learn to dig your way out of it. And I think that parallels the whole idea of going down rabbit holes. Sometimes you go so far deep into a rabbit hole, you don't want to dig your way out when presented with new information. It's a lot easier to stay at the bottom because it's hard to dig your way out of a pit, to climb out. And I think we definitely see that within our own community. By the sounds of it before, you kind of mentioned that space was one of the major paradigm shifts for you. What has been another paradigm shift, say, within the past 3 years? What's a big one that's kind of challenged your thinking?
Well, it has to do with space, but it's kind of adjacent, which is just that, well, it's, I could put it this way, that the calendar is not reflecting what we are really experiencing. As all of this has led me to, all the space stuff has led me to observing the sky for myself, and looking at the calendar and looking at when they say the equinox is, I don't agree. It is not reflective to the reality that I observe around me. It's off by days. You know, we're not talking just completely batshit way off. It could be a clerical error that people couldn't admit they were wrong, so they just stayed on the wrong day. But nevertheless, that's not true. And that through that, you know, all the things like various different religious holidays and things like that that have to do with dates, I question all of those. And all of this has come in just the last 5 years tops, really more like 4 years. Gosh, no, it's more like 5 years because it's been COVID for four fucking years already.
I could almost pinpoint the moment when you start to notice that maybe the seasons don't quite align with our 12-month calendar, that it's possibly 13 months. Essentially, it's not what we're kind of sold at the moment. I can pinpoint that when I can remember an episode, I might have been on Buffalo and Legs show when you were having a conversation about homesteading, and it was around you observing the reality of the sky and the season at a current point. And I think I could almost hear the light bulb moment for you that something wasn't lining up.
Yeah, it probably happened on air. you know, and I could address that on its own. I've changed opinions live. I mean, well, I guess these all get recorded and go out, but nevertheless, in conversations that are recorded, you can if someone took the time to go back and listen to every word I've ever said that's gone out on podcasts, you can hear me change my mind. You can hear me open my mind to something that I was close to moments before. And you can hear where that comes in, and also maybe closing them, like moving away from something. That's a close. In order to open something, you have to close something sometimes, it seems like, right? And, you know, that's something that I think anybody who's podcasting has to deal with. If they're truly open-minded, if they're really actually taking in information and changing their minds about things, if you have too much pride to ever say you were wrong, then get the fuck off the microphone, man. you know, I can't imagine what it would be like if I was a flat earther and I went on and on and on, and I had the Flat Earth podcast, and all I did was talk about Flat Earth, and then something happened to shatter my paradigm, and now I believe in the globe again. Crap. Well, I've got this following. I've got thousands of people who are listening, and I've changed so many people's minds this way. Would I come out and say it, or would I swallow my pride and hope that people follow me through my journey? Or I'm afraid that a lot of people couldn't do that and they would just keep going. And I can't imagine what that would be like to not believe in flat earth and sit there and try and convince people of it.
It's the benefit of the community. I think we almost saw that happen in real time with Tartaria. Tartaria was so big. Mud flood was massive. We had heaps of prominent people talking about it so adamantly.
Yes.
And then a few prominent people came out and said, you know what? Looking at it now in hindsight and its totality, there are aspects of this which make me question it. And they'll open it up front with that. That kind of threw the community of that particular thought process into a bit of a tizzy for a small part, because there's lots of people going, how could you do this? You've been giving us the truth for so long, yada, yada, yada. And then there was the other people going, you know what? Actually, yeah, that does kind of make sense. It could be true. And there's aspects of it which align with it being true, but we can't be sure for certain.
Yeah, that happened outwardly for a lot of people. A lot of people who were podcasting, a lot of people who were blogging, talking, writing things, this and that. Excuse me. But, you know, and I was affected by that to some degree. But I was affected by it because I was kind of working myself out of something right as that happened, which was, you know, the word Tartaria, the nationality of Tartaria. I kind of had a hard time with that from the get-go because I loved the concepts that everyone who was, you know, if you were talking Tartary, I was listening. And I kind of felt pigeonholed into bringing it out as Tartaria, using that word, because I knew something was afoot. Everything that I learned through that whole experience, I've brought through with me. There was not that I do not no longer question the age of buildings. I do not no longer think that history is askew and messed up and all these things. Everything I learned and am and am carrying it through with me. But I was getting ready basically to drop that word. I was going, you know, I don't think if it was one nation that did this, I don't like that. And I feel like we're all praising Tartaria like it was this great thing. But people like Emmanuel Kingman, who hasn't been podcasting so much lately, but great friend. You know, he was questioning, well, what is it like Tartarus? Is this a bad thing? Is this evil? And I was going, oh yeah, you know, I can hear where you're coming from. Like, what if these were the ultimate controllers? What if this is more freedom than people had during the time of Tartaria?
Jeez, isn't that horrifying thought?
Yeah, right. But you know, it might be. Maybe cataclysms came during that civilization, during a past advanced civilization, because they were trying to travel to space, damn it. And they caused massive floods because they brought the space waters down. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe these rulers that we have now are suppressing Tartaria, because that's a part of it too. Is like, you can see the CIA documents that are suppressing the word Tartaria. What's up with that? Like, why do we want that pushed out? Why is it removed from maps? Why is it? There's a whole lot of why is it surrounding that word. But as I moved away from Tartaria itself, I didn't move away from the old world. That's basically what happened, is I switched my verbiage from Tartaria to old world. As like, as soon as I started hearing that, I think I heard it for not the first time, but I heard it being presented by Old Scary World, and it was like, oh yeah, I like just old world. I don't need to attach this word Tartaria to it. And then those guys came through with their videos that said that they were wrong about everything. And all these people tucked their tails and ran, and they went, oh my God, I can't believe I wasted all my time and energy with all of this stuff. It was all bunk. Well, you just heard that. It was literally just presented to you. Don't you think you need to hear that, have your paradigm shattered, and then go do some research and see if it's true?
And you like know? You said, it's okay to take bits and pieces from things, because that's how we put and formulate our ideas and understand those. We take bits and pieces from everything to help us build a picture. It's like small puzzle pieces to help us understand the world we live in. And what I think the ultimate problem with Tartaria was, not only was it a singular word that had this kind of broader definition of a single global society, but it had the what-if-isms. There's a lot more what-ifs than there were of observable reality. The observable reality we had, rather, was the buildings, where you could see that they were sunken down into the ground, the architecture, a lot of not noticeable things, which was great, but there was more what-ifs. There was more deep research we could go into opposed to just looking at something. And to draw a contrast, your understanding of the seasons, the calendar, everything that we understand of the cycle of the world, I think that has more real-life applicable observable reality for you. I'm sure you've definitely gone off and done your research about it, but I think your day-to-day observations help ground that research a little bit more. It's where Tartaria lacked that a little bit. We're more reliant on people's videos and people's research, and we take that as observable reality.
Yeah, Tartaria is done entirely through books. Almost entirely. I mean, we look at buildings too. But like for me, I've never had a smoking gun building that I've touched, that I've been like, this proves to me that this building is older than they say, goes farther down than they say, you know, whatever else. I've never had that smoking gun in my face in real life. Whereas the calendar stuff, that all of the research is being done with my boots on the ground, or even better, my feet, because we should all be grounding more, guys. but it's all done with my eyes and my sky that is above me all the time, and that's something that I feel, you know, I asked that question last night on Are We Content. Is this reality? Well, that sky is a reality to me. It's my observable reality in front of me. Of course, if Bob were here, he would be saying, but how do you know it's not a hologram? And he's right. I don't know.
Very well, could be.
But even if it is a hologram, then what I'm discovering is that the people who are writing about the hologram on the calendar are not reflecting that properly. Something's not being reflected properly, and I can really see that. Whereas Tartaria, I can look at some things and get a twinkle in my eye and enjoy it. But as far as like the real paradigm shattering stuff, that's all coming from books. It's even coming from not CIA documents, but the blacked out parts of CIA documents. The stuff that I can't see is more compelling than the stuff that I can see. You know what I mean? And that makes, you know, I don't think I'm going to be putting up the old world and leaving it behind anytime soon. It's going to keep me, I'm not going to see an old building and not start evaluating it with my own eyes in reality, probably for the rest of my life. Unless I get so busy with other things, if we have an apocalypse, I'm not going to be worried about architecture anymore.
No. And the whole idea of the calendar and the seasons that affects your day to day life as a homesteader, you are reliant on knowing when the seasons are going to start and finish, new moons, all those types of things. So you can make sure you know when to sow your crops, when to bring them in, when to put out animals, when to bring them in for the winter. It actually affects your day-to-day life. Having an observable reality of the sky, the seasons, the nature that we're surrounded by, it's applicable to you. Knowing how a building was built, how long ago, was it melted, was it flooded, doesn't really change your day-to-day life and the operation in which you live.
Mm-hmm. It does not. And like I said, if the apocalypse comes, I won't be really spending a lot of time looking at that. However, if the apocalypse comes and I survive, you know what I'm going to be looking at more? I'm not going to be looking for a conspiracy anymore. I'm simply going to be gathering data for my future of what I see in the sky. The seasons will become ultimately more important in the apocalypse. The time of year and what that means for weather is going to become more important at that point. Like right now, it's not that it's not important. Like you said, I'm homesteading. Not to mention, I go outside and I have to figure out what I'm wearing. You know, if I'm going to wear a cold coat or, you know, a warm coat or cool shorts out there, that's all important. But, it's going to be exponentially more important to keep my house warm when I don't have gas hookup. I'm going to need to be thinking about the winter all summer long. And I'm going to need to think about the summer all winter long in order to make those opposing times of year work. And the only way that I'm going to be accurate on that is to observe the sky, especially if, like, you know, if it's a real deal apocalypse, but I survive and I'm doing okay. I don't have anyone else to compare notes with anymore. I don't have the internet. Maybe I can go to a burned out library or something, but how good is that going to be on understanding the sky that's right above me? Not nearly as good as just looking up and paying attention.
Even the tracking of days would be hard for people in the modern age. People are so reliant on either a physical calendar or their phone, something to keep track of the days, because if you're out there just purely surviving, getting firewood ready for the coming winter, if you forget to note down a few days over the space of 365 days, what have you, you could be a week out in where you think you are and you could miss a really important window to plant things. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes that compounds over time. You will not have a crop in at the right time. It might become the rainy season too early for you for when you plant it, and it could destroy your crop. That means you don't have food for the following winter. It's things that really impact you. And that's why the sky, the stars, were so important to ancient humans. And I think, yeah, you're on a really good track with this idea of understanding the sky, the seasons, and what is the calendar and what's true, because it's so applicable to who you are and to what you do and what you do in your life.
It is. It directly reflects my own reality. Again, my own reality, my reality of my wife and my kids, and my birds and my crops and my essentially livelihood. I've got to make things. Conspiracy is fun, but the calendar and the seasons isn't fun. I mean, I have a little fun. Don't get me wrong, but it's not for fun. Tartaria is for fun. Deep-seated government plans against me. It's kind of fun. but
can you liken it to almost like junk food conspiracies? Like it's great to open up a bag of Tartaria and just munch down. Whereas, you know, the meat and the potatoes and the meat and three veg is the calendar. It is.
Yes.
Understanding spraying
that's my,
in the
that's
sky.
That's my nutrition. That's my nutrition. And sometimes I like to be a couch potato and watch a movie and eat some junk conspiracy, which is I'm just fine with, you know, whether it's the real food that we're talking about or the conspiracy food that we're talking about. You know, we all need to unwind. If I only spent my time just, you know, Bob and I did an episode a little bit back that I titled Rigorous Sky Watching, where I was really trying to emphasize the more I look at the sky, the more I realize I need to look at the sky a lot more. the more I look at it, the more I realize how much I'm not seeing. And if everything else melted away and I only had that to survive, that would be one thing. But I don't live in that world. I live in a world where I need to unwind and I need to do other things. And honestly, you know, conspiracies as a whole just get my opiate receptors going. It gives me a thrill. I am stoked when my jaw drops and I think, oh shit, maybe the Masons are not in control. You know, like that's another one that fits in real good with this whole conversation is I spent a long time going, no, it's the Masons. Oh, I know it's the Masons.
It's the easy go-to. It's like the word Tartaria. It's a loaded word now that can, you know, be blanketly applied to any conspiracy theory now.
And it does connect to every conspiracy theory, it seems like. So, you know, it's low-hanging fruit, right? It's so low-hanging that I would say, gee, it's like it's in front of our face and it's probably not the one. It's probably not what it is. It's more likely that the Masons are being presented to me in such a way to get me to not look at the Illuminati or the next one over, whoever it is that is in control. But maybe it's the Masons are there to stop me from looking at bankers, and the bankers are there to stop me from looking at politicians. And the politicians are there to stop me looking at whoever is next on this totem pole.
Yeah, it's an idea that things can be deliberately inserted or put in, like you said, in plain view, in plain sight, that low-hanging fruit. That is the psyop, and you see, everyone is quick to call someone a Mason. It's like the boy who cried wolf. It's the Masons that did this. It's the Masons behind that. And it's something that gets a little bit tiresome. Like, is there a lot going on with the Masons? Absolutely. There's a lot of questions there. There's a lot of reasons that you should ask why they're involved in this. But if we know who they are, fundamentally, I think as truth is we know that if we know their name and they're out in the public, they're probably the doorman, the greeter for the big bad guys who kind of run things.
Maybe even just the foot soldiers.
Yes.
You know, they're you know, like something that'll get pointed out for Masons a lot is every small town, every single small town
has a lodge,
has a Mason lodge. You know, you go to there's a museum in a small town. It's a couple of towns north of me, right on the border there. They have a little museum and there's a whole room in this museum that's dedicated to the Masons of this county and how they built. I mean, you go in there and it's basically, this is why everything that you can see exists is because of these people, and they were all Masons. That doesn't mean that those were the conspirators. I think that's the way I want to say it. That doesn't mean they're the ones that are doing it. They're not conspiring. they're just doing what they're just building. They got here. They were sent here, or they moved here and they started a lodge and they started building, and they had resources that other groups didn't have. So just a few loggers that were trying to build a community might be less successful than, you know, a banker and a mason and one logger. So then those communities actually take off, whereas the other ones, you know, they cut some logs, they make some lumber. The water wheel they were using rots out and it's gone, and that was just it just fizzled out. So that's not going to be remembered. But the ones that had masons that had some kind of backing behind it, because our government was largely involved with masonry, it seems like, although, you know, say that to a lot of people and they'll go, oh, no, George Washington wasn't actually a Mason. You know, they'll tell you who wasn't actually a Mason. And, you know, that's it really, this all Masons really combine in really well with this whole conversation, because there's definitely something there, but it's also something that I think everyone needs to believe it's the Masons to be a good conspirator. And then I think to be a really good one, you need to not believe in them anymore, or not believe that they're the source anymore. You need to go beyond that.
I like how you said it's great to have this idea of thinking about things as being nutrition versus your snack or your junk food, because far more often than not, people end up being black-pilled in this realm of thinking. But you don't go in black-pilled. You go in excited and enthusiastic. You want to eat that entertainment value of it. And then you find the black pills along the way. And to inevitably get out of that, you kind of have to learn more. And you can be very black-pilled if you think Masons are the be-all, end-all controllers of the world who want to kill everybody.
They're everywhere.
But if you go, wait a minute, could be just foot soldiers, could just be the people displayed to us to try and scare us. Then you open up your thinking again, and again, that paradigm shift, I think, improves the way you have an outlook on the world, especially in our little truther communities.
Mm-hmm. It's extremely important to always be able to move forward with whatever it is. Because that's something else that happens within becoming so certain and not allowing skepticism anymore, is that you're not moving. You're stuck. You're just like everyone else who's stuck in the paradigm of the matrix that we all have going on around us, right? Like you're just as stuck as they are. And that's like the freeing thing of being in this community, in this world, is that we're not stuck. We're moving, and we're moving forward. And, you know, I'm going to figure out what the seasons really are. Actually, I've already figured out what the seasons really are. I'm just going to figure out how to apply those seasons to my existence the best I can. And that's absolutely moving forward. But sitting there and going, no, just pounding my fist and saying, no, ancient technology, this happened. It had to have happened. I'm going to find the smoking gun. I'm going to go to every building in America until I find proof that this building is hundreds of years older than I'm told, if not thousands. Oh, and then if I find that, what do I get? A cookie? I'm right.
Well, you just explained the difference. I don't know if you've got this terminology over there, moving the goalposts. Like move on beyond things. But often when people are dogmatic and fixed in their mindset, they'll move the goalposts to adjust their theory. And I think you see that really, really well in the Q movement. A lot of these drops that have give set dates, which is always a bad thing. Anytime you give a set date, you're kind of on the back foot, because the date comes and nothing happens. It's a nothing burger. So they keep moving the goalposts. And then within that community, it's a bigger operation. There's more things going behind the scenes. They keep moving the goalposts out further and further. So it gives them more space and more time for their theory without initially going, hang on, what we were told was true didn't occur. Maybe I should look into this more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good phrase for it, because, yeah, well, when you got a date, anytime there's a date, we talked about dates a little bit last night too, because of the eclipse. But it's when you put a date, when you say the world is going to end on tomorrow, And then we get to tomorrow and you're praying and you're ready for it. And then it's the next day and the world is still moving on. You're going to have to adjust those goalposts unless you're going to swallow your pride in a really great way, in a way that's very good for you, because you're going to be a little more careful the next time you're picking a date. And maybe even more important than in picking the date, you're going to be more careful about how you present that to people. You say, I have X, Y, and Z reasons to believe the world is going to end on this date. Now, am I right? I hope not. Or I hope I am right. Whatever it is you want out of it. But these are my opinions and I am telling you my opinion. You know, that's Alex Jones. That's where he fucks up. I love Alex Jones in one sense, but all he does is state things like they're facts, and he gets people wound up and they believe that this is absolute truth because they heard Alex Jones say it. And I think Alex Jones swallowing his pride and being like, oh shit, you know, if he gave a finite date of the end of the world and he didn't move the goalposts afterwards and said, I was wrong about everything, the documents were wrong, people, then that would be good for him. Except he's like a brand. He's not, I don't even know if he's a real person. But that would be good for his brand if they were to start going, okay, let's present ourselves as people with ideas and opinions rather than people who are telling you what is going to happen on the eclipse. Let's tell you what we think these things could be rather than what they are.
Well, you can apply that to what you would consider to be the normie real world with politicians. How many politicians do you see come out after making a bad policy that backfires and maybe impacts the economy or does something really bad on a geopolitical stage? They don't turn around and go, you know what? We stuffed up. We dropped the ball on that one. Now we need to make amends for it. Have you ever seen a politician, say, from America come out and go, the war on terror was a complete and utter failure? No.
Besides Ron Paul? No. Oh, yeah. With very, very rare exceptions, no. And that's where that term move the goalposts, that's where I hear that almost exclusively is in the political realm, because that's all they do. That is all they do. Mm-hmm. They never, ever, ever say, oh, we were wrong about this. They never say, oh, make it, these taxes were, they, we're going to tax you to build this or that. And then we were unable to do that. We screwed up. We're gonna tuck our tails and say you shouldn't trust us anymore. or something. They're gonna say, oh, why did you guys think that $1.2 trillion was enough? Obviously, when we said that, we were saying for the first 2 months, and we were gonna need another $2 trillion every 2 months. Therefore, out. You know,
It's the doubling down to try and back their own idea of. We can't be wrong. And it's that the idea of failure is a bad thing. Failure is fertilizer. It doesn't matter what it is and what aspect of life. If you fail, that's a great opportunity to grow and learn.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's my whole, like outside of conspiracy, that is my philosophy of life, is I don't fail. I only learn. I don't know. I'm going to let you in on a secret, Drew. I have no idea what I'm doing when I'm doing anything in life. I never have any idea. I don't know what I'm doing when I just got turkeys for the first time. I do not know what I'm doing. I am not going to fail at having turkeys, even if I don't have turkeys in a week from now, because I fuck up and they die. I'm going to go, awesome. I just learned how to kill 4 turkeys before they were ready to eat. I learned what not to do. I learned a negative lesson. If you've listened to me enough, I'm sure you've heard me talk about my first chicken coop I built was a little A-frame that I just started hammering 2x4s together. And it was intended to be a tractor, which is a mobile light unit, but I did not know what I was doing. And I just kept hammering wood together until it was ready. And I fastened a couple of wheels on it and I lifted it up and the whole thing cracked. And it was like, oh, right. Cause it's really heavy. Why did I think in retrospect, I'm like, why did I even think that would work? Okay. Well, let's build the next one. You know, it was well, no, we're not going to be putting this on wheels. I need to have four adults to be able to move this thing. We just need one on each corner and we can still move it. You know, eventually that ended up in a permanent spot. And I've built multiple chicken tractors, mobile light units since then. Some too light. Some have been blown by the wind and that's no good. Others too heavy. You know, now this year I'm using a new one for the first time. And I want to tell you, I got it right this time. I think I did. No matter what, I learned another one. You know, I learned another failure. Except failure is just the wrong word, because it's I'm not failing with any of these things. Even when I lose something that was valuable, I am simply taking that in as a lesson. And I think that I've been more aware of that over the last few years because I've been homeschooling my kids. And I just have to believe, I personally believe that everything is a lesson. We're just constantly learning. There's no moment in time that we're not learning. Even when you think you're wasting your time eating junk food and watching a movie, you're learning something. I don't know if I can tell you what it is. You're learning something. Maybe you're learning how you don't want to spend your time. Maybe you're learning how you do want to spend your time. You're learning something. There's something there. We're constantly growing. Our brains are constantly taking things in.
We are the original AI, Chud. Like we do what AI does. Whatever right. we see around us, whatever we take in, we are learning from. Essentially, that's like prompts with AI. AI only learns as much as you give it. Humans are the same way. If you limit someone's experiences or their interactions, they're not going to learn as much. So everything down to the minute scale of, I buttered my toast and it fell on the ground, butter side down. That's interesting. Next couple of times does the same thing. Hey, I've just learned that butter on one side of a piece of toast always makes it fall face down. That's and one small example.
Maybe I need to expand my learning and figure out what I'm doing that makes it keep falling.
Yes.
And is there a way I can avoid dropping my toast? Why do I keep knocking it off the counter? Yeah. Maybe I should drop it before I butter it.
Yes. Small, tiny things. That's the perfect outlook on life, is that if things don't go according to plan, it's not a failure. It's a learning opportunity. And that's the teacher in me. And I say this to students all the time. It's an opportunity to learn. Let's reflect on it. What could you do differently next time to have a different outcome? Mm-hmm. Anything you do.
A downfall I see for a lot of people is saying, I'm not going to do, this is in real life stuff, not conspiracy world, but just in real life. I'm not going to do X, Y, or Z because that's a waste of time. I'm not going to build a fence today because it will only hold a chicken and not a horse. So that's a waste of time. I'm going to wait until I have the material that's strong enough and good enough to build one that can hold a horse, because, you know, I'm going to get a horse someday, or I have a horse as well, but the horse is tied up and, you know, you got to build a fence somewhere somehow, and you got to use what's in front of you. And maybe even think that material you have will hold the horse, but of course it won't, because it's just welded wire stuff as opposed to braided, you know, I don't know, whatever else. We can't ever get stuck because we're waiting for the right thing.
I've learned from that exact thing. Here's a real life scenario of that. Last year, I put some storm water in from an extension we had of new veranda on the back of our house. And instead of taking the time to prime the storm water to bring back that sheen so it could actually be spray painted properly, I just spray painted it. Like, I don't have the time. I'm just going to spray paint it, get it done. Well, now, a little over a year later, it's starting to peel and chip, so I'm going to have to paint it again. At the moment, I'm putting a new water tank in. So I've learned from that. With the new storm water, I'm priming it properly, taking off that sheen so I can, when I do spray it, it's not going to be worn away by the weather conditions as quickly. I think
our fathers, a lot of fathers are responsible for this attitude, because a lot of dads, when you mess up, get down on you and they'll say, what were you thinking not doing all the proper steps before you did it? Or mothers, you know, but our elders, the people who we look to guide us through things, who know. And it's easy as a father myself, it's easy for me to maybe get upset with a child for not doing the three steps before the final thing they did. And then it's a waste of time, right? Well, I choke it back and I say, oh, cool. You did this little project. Go stress test it. And then they find out that it doesn't work. And then if they come to me and ask advice, I'll help them. Otherwise, let them build it again. And hopefully they don't repeat the exact same thing, but tweak something and watch them work their way through the project until it's going to be strong enough that it can take the stress and it can be tested and it doesn't fall apart. And we have a culture, I'm speaking for myself. I don't know how different things are in Australia from here on this type of stuff, but we have people who are like hoarders, with too much garbage in their house. And I've seen in real life people who have a very, very filthy home, and you say, hey, you got to do something about this. And they go, yeah, I would, but it's too big of a job. It's like, yeah, but you could, there's like a million things to do, right? Like you can pick up one thing and it can seem like it's a pointless task. Put it in a prettier scenario. When you look at a garden bed that's full of weeds, that tall weeds, it can be like, oh crap, I let it go too far and now it's been overrun by weeds. But you're also standing there to make that analysis of the situation. But if you just pull one, then you can see a little bit better how many there are. And maybe it's actually only about 100. And 100 seems like a lot. But once you've pulled 10, just doing that 10 more times, that's not that big a deal. And so people can get stuck in a rut, or be just stuck in a hole where they're saying, I need to do something. I need to build this fence, but I don't have the proper material. If you feel very strongly about the material to use, go get the material. Yeah, you can get it. There's a way to procure that.
It's the too hard basket. People look at something and go, oh, it's too much right now. It's far easier just to not do anything and kind of not worry about it. Learning doesn't happen specifically in time. It happens over time. And like your analogy of the fence, well, okay, I can't afford all the materials for the fence at the moment, but maybe I'll go buy the nails for it. Mm-hmm. Nails are here ready. The next following week, okay, I've got a little bit more money. Maybe I'll buy the wire mesh that I'm going to use on this fence. And over time, you're getting the materials you need to build it. It doesn't have to happen all at once, but as long as you're doing small things incrementally, you will get there.
And if you're keeping it small enough increments, if you don't even have the money to buy those things, you can probably find them all for free somewhere. They're going to suck. But would you waste your time building a crappy fence that can continuously be improved upon until it is a good fence? Or are you just going to wait for another 2 years before you can afford the materials to make the good fence? You can go out and you can find, at least here, you can go to a farm and you can ask, hey, you got any old fence posts? And they're like, yeah, there's a whole stack of them over there, but don't use them. They're all crap. They've all been pulled out of the ground for one reason or another. And that's probably true, but that doesn't mean that you can't make a real, real crappy fence out of that, which is better than no fence at all. And if you don't have the good braided wire for the horse, but you do have some tack welded, little wire that can go around, and you get that for free as well. So it's not even tack welded anymore. It's all loose. Well, you've taken the time to sink the holes for the posts. Then you wrap it with this crappy fence. In time, you do get good fence or a better fence, not even the good stuff, but better. And you can just take it off and use those same posts that are all getting a little loose and rickety now. Well, now you've worked your way towards, I'm going to go out and buy posts, or I'm going to cut down trees and make my own posts, or I'm going to get good posts. And guess what? You already got a hole. You got a hole to put that in. You can pull those other ones out, and you're not starting from zero to do that. But a lot of people will stay at zero for a long time, maybe even a lifetime. Maybe they will say, I can't do this thing that I really want to do until I'm 67 years old, because that's where I've decided that I'm going to retire from my 5 day a week job. So I'm not going to work towards that at all. And then by the time you're 67 and you hit your point, you're just too tired to do it. but you could have been maybe working on it the whole time a little bit. And then you don't need to be, you don't need as much energy by the time you get to your retirement. And then you can take that car that you were going to rebuild once you were retired. If you work on it until you're retired, maybe you can take it out and drive it when you are retired.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
People tend to think that they're sacrificing time when you're trying to allocate things that you want to do long term. But if you're, it should be considered investing in time. You're investing in something for the future. Car analogy is great. I'm doing the same thing at the moment. I'm restoring a car now so that I've got something for my future as a weekender, something that the wife and I can go drive around and have picnics and stuff in. It's a hell of a lot of work right now, absolutely. Is it a pain when you think about, oh, geez, I have to pull out the engine this weekend and that's going to be a hell of a job. That's going to be a whole day. In my mind, sometimes I think, geez, that's a day of my holidays that's taking up so much time. But on the other side of things, I go, wait a minute, that's the engine gone. I can respray the engine bay then once the engine's out. I can retune the engine. I can get that working for next time. It's those incremental steps which are going to give me a better result at the end.
And it'll be there at the end, as opposed to starting when you would be at the end.
Yes.
You know, it's a sad condition. And the reason that we ended up here from this conversation is that it's very similar to what happens with people getting stuck in rabbit holes. It's very similar to the person who finds the total truth and then they stand on it, and we'll call that zero. And they stand at zero and the world moves on around them and they're just stuck at zero when they could be incrementally moving along and growing and learning. Because, you know, that's one of the only things I think we really have. Again, the reality. In reality, we have learning, we have creating, and we have love. And I don't know that there's anything else. Like I think that might be all of it. if we're not doing those things, then we're depressed. Then we're not moving. We're at zero. If we're not doing, maybe not even doing all three of them, but if you're not doing any of those things, if you're not loving, creating, or learning, that's got to be what depression is, you know? But when you can find those things, and you have to find them, they don't come to you necessarily. You've got to find them. And, you know, especially creating, that's the one that's really easy to see. You've got to create to create. You got to stand up and create to create. You can't just wait for it to create. But a lot of people are waiting to learn. They're waiting for love. And then once they have those things, they figure they'll start creating.
What a fantastic conversation. We initially went in with the idea talking about how this is how this impacts the idea of the conspiracy realm, but it ended up becoming almost like a life lessons type of an episode, which yeah. It does. It so intertwines, and it's beautifully put the way you just rounded that out, that really there's a few things in life that you need to be whole, and without those, it is a very dark, depressing place. And unfortunately, that comes back to the conspiracy realm. When you think you are the purveyor of all knowledge and you found the truth and you're not willing to budge and you're stuck on zero and you keep moving your goalposts without incrementally moving and growing and adapting, that's how people become easily black-pilled. And I think that's where we see the divisions in our community, where you see infighting over the shape of the earth. Does the shape of the earth ultimately matter? No. Do we know that there's lies about it? Yes. Why can't we come together on common ground? It seems like it's something that's becoming harder and harder in our community. And I certainly hope that this conversation sparks a light bulb, lights a fire under a few people's asses, and helps them consider a paradigm shift in their current thinking or whatever it is.
Thanks for having me, Drew. This is, like you said, this has just been an awesome conversation. I always like talking to you because it seems like no matter what it is, we always start out heavy and then somehow it gets really heavy and really deep.
But it always has a great outcome. And I think there's always a great message when we have our conversations, Chad. I think you're a very open-minded individual that, like I said, you've got this ability to look at things and admit that you don't know everything. And that's a great grounding position to be from. And not viewing failures as a bad thing, seeing as an opportunity, is fantastic. Thanks for coming on today, mate. This is an absolute great conversation. For the listeners who may not be aware of you and your work, where can they find you?
You can find me at Are We Content or Content. You can spell it either way. It happens to be spelled the same. But that's my podcast. You can find it on podcatchers everywhere. I do it through Spotify. So if you're on Spotify, it's real easy to listen, but you can find it through Apple or any place else. I also do a lovely podcast with my lovely wife, Lanny, which is called The World As It Is Today, which you can find by searching for it through podcasters everywhere as well. And that one, we tend to focus a little more on the family unit and family dynamics and homesteading and things like that. Whereas Our Week in Tent is me and Moral Bob, and we are two weirdos who will talk about anything and go down any rabbit hole, or sometimes we just talk about movies and TV and stuff too. So we go in any direction we feel like.
A great amount of content you put out, my friend. Some really grounded base stuff around family, homesteading, things that are really applicable to people's lives. And then there's the fun stuff. There's the fun stuff you and Bob do. It's that mix of having satiating, well-intended things to listen to about your life versus the fun junk food, couch potato stuff, which we all like to get into.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely.
And on that note, we'll catch you next time, everyone.
Hey everybody, it's closing time. You don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.